And we are the Nonprofits. I'm Dennis Lube, and there's Jeff D. and Russell Glasser. And we're not doing anything, we're just talking about atheist issues from an undisclosed location in Austin, Texas, on the 15th of January, 2014. We're allowed to do that. And there's no law against the show being sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state. And even if there was, you could still learn more about the ACA by calling their voicemail at 512-220-6561 or visiting their website at www.atheist-community.org. It's a free country. We can broadcast live every first and third Wednesday of each month from 7 to 8 Central Time if we want to. And no one is going to stop you from joining the Nonprofits chat room by following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com. So there's no reason why you can't sit back and enjoy the show.
Awesome.
No reason at all.
No.
Thank you, Dennis.
Right. Great. And we're not being defensive. You're being defensive.
Yeah. How's everybody been?
I'm good. You good?
Yeah.
On a scale from sucks to awesome.
Most things lie in the middle.
I got a couple of things coming up.
You do?
Yeah.
Not here.
You mean like events?
Yes.
Is that what you're trying to say? You might want to use that word.
So. Tomorrow, well, shit. I just realized. No, okay, some people are listening to us live, like five people, I would guess.
Uh-huh, right.
And then there are all the people who download it, but we don't really upload these shows until several days later. So by the time you hear this, you've already missed it.
Sorry about those popping sounds. That was my fault. Maybe we shouldn't announce things that are...
Yeah, but
imminent.
It's going to be a recorded Google Hangout, so I will have joined this atheist group in Kentucky who are having their social gathering Thursday evenings, and they're also, like, I think maybe from the upper floor of a bar, they're going to be doing a live Google Hangout with me and Linnea, and we're going to do some Q&A about doing a TV show and stuff.
Cool.
How am I going to tell people what to look for?
Just tell them the date. Oh, I see.
Tomorrow.
Oh, boy.
No, don't say tomorrow because we don't know when they're listening.
That would be Thursday, January 16th.
Yeah.
Yep.
With the Louisville Atheists.
Okay.
So look up their group and they'll probably have that saved somewhere.
On a completely unrelated note, I'm just going to jump in here with an event of my own. It has nothing to do with atheism.
Yes, go
it's
on.
ChupacabraCon at the airport at the airport Hilton here in Austin, Texas. I'll be there Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Sucking goats?
No,
isn't that
it's a
chupacabras
game and,
do?
I don't. No, chupacabras don't do anything because there's no such thing.
You know, ChupacabraCon fits just perfectly into the fourth day of Christmas.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, the it's got the right number of syllables.
Day of Christmas. And what
no,
is
no,
it?
No. You know, five golden rings, ChupacabraCon. It's like...
It's actually one more, I think.
Yeah, ChupacabraCon.
It
works.
Okay.
Gaming convention. I'll be there running games.
Okay.
What else you got for... Is there more announcements?
There's one more thing. I think over the weekend of February 2nd, people may remember that we are part of this blog network called Freethought Blogs.
Oh, yeah.
And that last summer, we did this virtual online convention. A whole bunch of Google Hangouts that were being attended live by a pretty good audience. I did a couple of panels. Some other ACA people did a couple of other panels. And over the weekend of February 2nd, we're doing it again.
Can I be involved this time?
Would you like to?
I'd like to, yeah.
I will send you the schedule, and you can propose more panels, because I think there's still some slots open.
Ooh.
Or you can join in one that is already working. But let's see. I know I will be participating in a counter-apologetics panel with the fine folks at the Reasonable Doubts podcast. And also I'll be involved in a parenting panel with Jen Peoples and Dale McGowan, the author of
Parenting Without God?
Yeah, something like that.
Atheist parenting.
Godless
parenting.
Something.
Kids Without Christ.
Well, he's also the author of Atheism for Dummies, another fine book.
Ah. Cool. Well, okay. That sounds like it's going to be awesome. And
it is.
So that's in February?
Yeah.
What part of February?
Beginning of February. Very beginning.
Well, now, our next episode will be the first Wednesday in February.
And
which
again,
is not
we'll be
for
too
which,
late to announce it.
That's going to be after?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Because you don't actually have a date to tell us when this conference thing is going to happen.
I do, but I don't have it on me.
Okay, I want you to dig that up. And
keep
dig
an
that
eye
up
on
we'll,
the
we'll,
Atheist Experience blog.
We'll keep the show rolling while you dig up that important number.
Okay.
Hi, everybody. We are the Nonprofits. Dennis, thanks for your intro. Russell, thanks for the news. Here we are. Can I just jump into a bit of listener mail?
Sure.
Should we do – I don't want to do that up front. Atheism on Campus, a little bit of a listener mail theme because mm-hmm. It's two letters on a similar subject count as a theme. Just to let you know what our
Excuse
standards
me.
Are.
The first day of Freethought Blogs Con is Friday, January 31st.
Ah, so it's in fact starting in January. That's why we'll not be able to announce it more than this.
Right.
True.
And if people want to listen to that, what do they do? They go to Freethought Blogs?
Yeah, go to freethoughtblogs.com. I'm sure it will be announced on multiple blogs.
Right.
They'll have some instructions.
So we got some email. I'm looking to start, dear nonprofits, I'm looking to start up a college atheist skeptic group. Here's the catch. I go to Duquesne University of the Holy Spirit.
That's a bad sign.
Good luck.
Holy Spirit.
I go here for the quality of the music program, not for the Roman Catholic ideals. Someone tried this in the past and failed. The university wouldn't allow him. He sent a link along with this, and mm-hmm. I'm not going to read the whole story. But basically, the student government has to vote on all proposed groups and voted them down, and then
right.
some representative of the university, I forget in what capacity, when asked about that decision, said, "Oh yes, that's right, because that's not that group would not be in keeping with our university's goals." The university, I'm getting some buzzing in my headset. Occasionally, just so you know. The university offers groups for most other religions, even those who aren't the major three. The university also claims to celebrate diversity. You see the issue here. I'm asking for some advice on how I should go about this. It's difficult finding people who I can relate with here in Pittsburgh. The meetups consist of mostly older people, and the events are few and far between. Let me know if you have any tips. I and many others would appreciate your advice greatly. Julian. Well, I can tell you from the dawn of the ACA that when the ACA first started meeting, it was mostly a few older people.
Yeah.
Don't let a thing like that stop you. You know, some older people are really very nice. And we'll all be them someday. I'm probably as old as people that been when I first went to the ACA meetings at the bagel shop. I'm probably as old as some of the people I thought were old then.
Yeah.
Now.
And so we're probably as old as the people he's saying are old.
If you let a thing like that, stop you from hanging out, you're missing a great opportunity and not helping.
The way you keep an atheist group from being limited to old white guys is to publicize the hell out of it specifically at people like women and minorities mm-hmm. and make sure that they are made to feel welcome when they get there and their particular concerns based on their demographic are taken seriously and discussed. Discussed,
right.
Not in disgust. part of the burden there is on you.
So that, but of course, that comment doesn't That stuff we just told you, it doesn't have anything to do with your university group problem.
Right.
I think it would be easier to expand a local group than to try to push this Catholic university into doing something that is probably
right.
against their
yeah.
mission statement.
Right. And if in fact you can't get a university group going, you shouldn't leave yourself then with no group whatsoever, you know. That, go hang with them old folks. The old folks like know stuff too. Some of them are.
That's right.
Some of them are quite smart. Another thing I can tell you from my experience, and Dennis can share this also, uh-huh. with our experience with the University Skeptical Society.
Oh yeah, they come and go.
That it's yeah. When I first joined up with the ACA, it was a group of old people cowering in a bagel shop, and there was one other kind of youngish guy there that I recall, Joe Zemecki. And Joe Zemecki said, "Hey, let's do a public access TV show." And the reaction from the rest of the group was like, "Oh no, we can't let Christians know that we're meeting and that we're doing things. They'll come and mow us down with machine guns." And I allowed myself mistakenly to get disgusted by that. I left that group and went and hung with the University Skeptical Society, which I had to do as an outsider because I was not a student. Hung with those folks. Problem with that group, with university groups in general, is that students eventually graduate and stuff and go away, and you never, there's no guarantee that you're going to have a good set of people that can keep the plate spinning,
right?
Forever.
There's
so
no continuity.
So
yeah,
that
I've heard many stories of where some really dynamic, active leader went away and left passed on the torch to somebody who was maybe a little less
active
about it.
If you do get a university group going, be aware of that and see if you can take some steps that will help perpetuate
your
group long-term.
Mentor your freshmen.
But that's actually not why I brought that up. Because the other thing that changes over time is the composition of your student government. And it was like a year or two ago that the student government shot down the last group.
Right.
Don't assume that the whoever's in there now will do the same thing. Right?
Yeah, they may have different values now.
Hell, if you've got enough atheists together to form a group at your university, maybe those atheists would like to get active in your student government first. You know, there's tactics you can pursue. So I would say it is not all lost. Chin up and move forward on any front you can think of, because it'll be interesting, at the very least. That was our first letter. Shall I just roll right into the next one, since we have two on the general subject?
Sure, if you want.
I think we should. Let's do the theme. Second letter. Oh, excuse me. Second letter. I live in London, Ontario, Canada. We have a large university in my city called Western University. It's my alma mater, and I recently took in a master's student as a renter in my house because I like to support the school community. She was raised Catholic. We both were. She is also from my hometown, but is an atheist now, like me. She has been very stressed recently due to the workload and a serious illness, and was sent to talk to a university-employed counselor. This counselor spent their hour together insulting her, suggesting she lose weight, dismissing her stress about school and her illness, etc. I told her that she should start – I'm sorry – not I. The counselor told her that she should start, quote, asking boys out so that people don't think she's a lesbian, unquote, and then proceeded to preach Islam at her.
Wow.
Oh. Double whammy.
Awesome.
Wow. That just went.
Did not
so
see that
ways.
One coming.
Right down the rabbit hole. She received no actual assistance with her problems and found the session so upsetting that it put her off going back for actual counseling.
Well, yeah.
Because she's shy and doesn't want to rock the boat, she won't complain to the university. I'm angry on her behalf and in general because religious nonsense should not be pushed on people in need of counseling and therapy. But I don't know what to do. Sort of wishing we had the ACLU up here to take take up the fight. We do have something called the CCLA, Canadian Civil Liberties Association, but their website seems to be more concerned with fighting for freedom of religion than for freedom from religion. Do you guys have any advice? Should I drop this or contact the CCLA and try or convince her to complain to the university first? Just not sure what to do. Thanks again for all you guys do. Wish we had an organization like the ACA up here to bring atheists together. Elon.
I don't think you should act on the other person's behalf.
Yeah, well, what almost...
Without their permission.
Yeah, almost any of those possible solutions you discussed is going to require the involvement of the person who experienced the prejudice.
Yeah, now you could you yourself go you to could, that same
you could
counselor.
Chaperone her.
Yeah, but the person writing us, Elon, is not a student.
Yeah, but right. I mean, it could be that she feels bad about this enough to feel like it should be reported, but putting the pressure on the person who's just been through a difficult situation to do the reporting is difficult and unfair and potentially adding more
stress.
emotional distress to someone who's just been through it. So even if this guy's not a student, if she wanted to report it, he could offer to be there with her as moral support.
Yes.
But you shouldn't push her so hard to report it that she feels like a bad person if she doesn't.
Right. If she's willing to go along, then maybe you could pursue those various options. But it sounds like the last thing she needs is a lot more pressure.
Right.
So there's that. You mentioned at the end that you wish you had a group like the ACA up there, by which I assume that you have neither a university atheist group or a local London, Ontario atheist group. Those are both routes you could pursue, having a group of people is going to make you more effective at anything you try to do.
Society of Ontario Free Thinkers, SOFREE.ca.
Are they in London, Ontario?
Well, they're in Ontario somewhere.
Ontario's
too big, yeah.
Canada's bigger than Russia, eh? At least they did a skit about that on TV. Largely my reaction to this is the same as to the first person, there's a lot of possible things you could do. All of them are interesting. There's ins and outs, but don't be dissuaded. If you want to do something, you don't have to achieve some victory over this Muslim counselor lady tomorrow. You're just starting now with the basics of getting a group together or finding an existing group could be a start on a path toward eventually doing something about it. Mm-hmm. Okay. How about some news, Russell?
Okay. How about some news? I have some sad news about the Kentucky theme park based on Noah's Ark.
They built it?
Oh. What's
no, it actually, it's more sad news for them. It turns out that they are owing about $29 million in unrated municipal bonds, which they have to they owe $29 million, and they need investors to buy that much worth of municipal bonds by February 6th. That might be a little bit of a challenge because, according to Bloomberg, they've only sold $26.5 million worth of securities in the whole time that they've been fundraising like crazy.
It's been several years.
So they have to raise another, more than they have already.
right.
in the next 2 weeks, which sounds like a great setup for like a scrappy underdog comedy, you know.
Right.
Yeah. You know, let's have a car wash. Or maybe let's sponsor a debate with Bill Nye or something.
I have a suggestion. Have they tried praying to God?
I don't know. They might not have thought of that.
God takes money. He doesn't give money. It sounds like a great Kickstarter project. Go, guys,
sure,
go.
Because they got 6 all those, days left.
They got pairs of every single animal on Earth, presumably, right? You'd think they could, you know, have different funding levels, like, you know.
Right.
Buy $3,000 in bonds and you get a pair of goats.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for the ocelot.
I'm going to be discussing this story again with this Kentucky Freethought group because they happen to be in the same state as the Noah's Ark theme park.
You know, Kentucky is also a big place.
That's true, but, I mean, they brought it up to me.
Oh, okay.
It seems that some of them actually tried to buy tickets to this upcoming Bill Nye debate, and they were sold out within minutes of showing up online.
Right.
Which, but I, you know, given that this Bill Nye thing seems to be a fundraising gimmick,
yeah.
where most of the proceeds are going to this, to Ken Ham's museum, where Ken yeah. Ham is the other guy on the other side of the debate.
Yeah.
I am not sure I'd be comfortable having people financially support that.
Yeah, really, there's no way for Ham to lose.
Yeah, but again, I don't think they're going to sell $29 million worth of tickets.
No.
And again,
no.
given that they've already scammed no. the city that they're in out of a whole bunch of mm-hmm. tax money on the grounds that they're going to be a big tourist attraction. Sorry, guys. Sorry, Williamstown, for being so gullible.
Now, what was the religious park, amusement park that closed?
Was that Kent Hovind's Dinosaur
yeah,
Park
must
in
be,
Florida?
Because now I'm seeing on Facebook, I'm seeing photos of people exploring the ruins, and it's.
Ooh.
I don't think that. I'm not sure that was that one.
No.
There are a number of these
really?
Failed Christian
okay.
parks. They, you know. Christianity is nothing if not a money-making enterprise, and one way
right.
you make money is by raising money, skimming off of it for some crazy project. You skim off it for yourself, and then you let the project fail.
It's
and somebody
just
walks
like,
away with a bunch of money.
Right. It's
Jimmy
just
Candy
like
Baker
the classic
walked away with
Mel Brooks movie, The Producers.
Yes.
Right. Right. So there's a number of those failed
Except
things, and I don't think that's a.
It might not be a surprise success.
It might be amusing to imagine that it's because nobody's interested in Christianity and they won't go to such places. Mm. But that's I don't think that's true. It seems more like they're designed to fail. That's my
wow.
theory. That's
mm.
my
possible.
That's my conspiracy
it's
theory.
Possible.
And I think God's in on it. all right. So.
Oral, have you got the money?
Yeah. Okay. Let's do Pope. Should we do Pope?
Let's do some Pope.
I'll start.
You go ahead.
He's so popular.
Sympathy for the drivel, I call this segment. We got some mail. While I completely agree that the Pope has been misrepresented in the media and that his policies are not much different from Ratzinger's, I completely disagree with you that the media hype is a bad thing. I recently moved...
Ow!
Okay, well, that's the guy had
right.
to say.
Yeah.
I recently moved from godless Sweden to Catholic Malta, where Auxiliary Bishop Charles Skikluna, I hope I pronounced that right, has been on a one-man crusade against gay civil unions and gay adoption for some time. However, our homophobic bishop's views are not shared by the people of Malta. I find most Catholics here are far more progressive than the Church will ever be. This is why the skewed media reports of Pope Francis's supposedly liberal outlook are a good thing. Yeah, and Dennis is just for the people at home. Dennis has made a puzzled look. I have that same puzzled reaction. If you tell me the people of Malta are already liberal about issues like that, then I don't see where the connection is that it's a good thing for the Pope to also be, right? What difference does it make? At best.
Especially when he's not being more liberal.
But this writer is talking about, this listener is talking about the misrepresentations,
yeah.
Right? That the misrepresentations are a good thing. But you can't be telling me that it's a good thing because it's going to make Catholics more liberal if you're saying that the place where you are, the people are already more liberal and don't care what he says. Let me go on. I have talked to several Catholics that tell me they are more or less okay with gay rights now after the Pope came out with the who am I to judge bullshit. The Catholics maybe I misunderstood him. Maybe he's saying the people of Malta are in general more liberal and okay with gay marriage, but that the subset of Catholics weren't until they thought the Pope said it was okay. But how is that a good thing? Then what you're telling me is at least in Malta, Catholics are mindless robots who will believe whatever the Pope says. So if the media misrepresents him, those Catholics may believe right at that moment, oh, the thing we're supposed to do now is be okay with gay marriage. The instant it comes out that that's not what the Catholic Church actually wants, or you get a new pope who's not making with the PR, right? And the message of the church switches back to what it really is, and people's understanding gets back to what it really is, those same Catholics will be right back to being against these things.
Now, it's my understanding
I'm not seeing anything here that implies that because of the misrepresentation of the pope as liberal, that Catholics are becoming more liberal anywhere, and it's going to stick.
It's my understanding the Pope really isn't for gay marriage.
Right.
He's against that. He's
right.
We talked about that on the last show.
Yeah. Right.
He was actively opposing.
Against it. But the media portrays him like he's for it somehow.
Which is really weird.
Right. Going on for the letter. The Catholics do not have a special secret Pope hotline that they can call and find out what he really meant. They are just not interested enough to read the documents in the statements in full and in the proper context. If the Pope is perceived as being gay-friendly and into social justice, this will have almost the same impact on Catholic communities as if he truly was gay-friendly and into social justice. And again, my response to that is, if the organization hasn't actually changed, then a temporary shift in the thoughts of Catholics as they robotically do whatever they think their church is telling them to do isn't an improvement. An actual improvement is what the world needs. An actual change in what the Catholic Church actually stands for would be important. I'm not interested in, for the next 3 weeks, Catholics around the world are going to not be against any of the things they're traditionally against.
Right.
And then they'll go right back. What good does that do us? And his final paragraph. Even if it is nothing but spin, and I believe it is, it will surely come back and bite the Vatican in its holy ass when they give the faithful perceived permission to move into a more modern way of thinking. Again, there's this assumption here that it's going to stick, and I don't see where that's coming from.
Well, he probably thinks it's a ratchet. You know, that liberalism in the church is a ratchet.
Yeah.
You know, it goes in one direction.
Then where's the evidence of this?
Yeah, I don't know. That's the thing.
I hope this...
Yeah, because the transition from the Pope John Paul to Ratzinger just kept the church's current level of liberalness, right?
Well, then again, they don't burn us anymore.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And it did take them only 300 years to apologize to Galileo.
Right.
Has the church apologized for burning unbelievers? Like ever? Has that happened?
They apologized for Galileo. I don't know what.
Don't know about the other guy. About
that. Galileo's one guy. A high-profile guy, but one guy.
I mean, they were, we apologize for all our previous deeds.
Throughout the Middle Ages into, you know, the 14, 1500s at least, they were happily burning people at the stake for anything they didn't like. Going on with the letter, even if it is nothing but spin, and I believe it is, we'll surely come back. Oh, sorry, they'll bite him in the ass. I hope this trend continues to the point where it gets impossible to backpedal without looking like a bunch of mustache-twirling cardinals from a Monty Python sketch. You can hope that, but...
even if they look that way, it doesn't matter to the to their base, so
I see no reason to... hope is one thing, but I see no evidence that that hope has any basis in reality.
Yeah, we'll just have to wait and see.
I mean, these are the people that rolled back Purgatory recently. Thanks for doing that, by the way, Catholic Church, because it's a wonderful example of your bullshit.
Well, you know, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen.
And also the evidence of things believed by all Catholics throughout the world for centuries until last Tuesday,
right?
And now not believed with equal fervor.
Yeah, were they wrong now or were they wrong then?
The Catholic Church just crossed off purgatory. Crossed it off.
Limbo, I think was.
Oh, it was a limbo. Sorry,
yeah,
limbo.
It was limbo.
Sorry, limbo, not Rush Limbo.
No.
No, although he'd like to cross off the Catholic Church right now.
Just crossed limbo off the list.
Yep.
And where there was no outrage by Catholics. They said, oh, okay, today we're supposed to not believe in limbo. Whereas yesterday we were supposed to believe in limbo. Okay.
Now, were they supposed to never have believed in limbo?
Don't know.
We have always been at war with Eurasia.
See, those of us who are what we call free thinkers, right? Who don't hitch our wagon to some institution, and that's the guys that are going to tell us what to think, and we'll just accept it, right? We ask those kinds of questions, Dennis, but
yes.
Believers don't.
No, they don't.
Their whole thing is whatever the organization says goes. So I just think that it's nonsense to think that some good, some long-lasting good is going to come out of a temporary misrepresentation of the Catholic Church's positions by the media. Mm. All it does short-term is it helps the Catholic Church get over a rough spot where they were really looking like a bunch of turds.
Right. You get to polish the turd.
We have some. Do you have some related news by any chance?
Yeah. Well, this isn't exactly news.
I know we do because we worked this out beforehand. But
yeah, it's not really news. It's an opinion piece on the Pope, but it happens to be an opinion that is pretty much ours. So
yay! Okay, cool. somebody in writing agrees with us.
Yes.
Well, that's a first.
This is in spectator.co.uk. That's an England newspaper, obviously. And it's written by a fellow named Luke Coppin, who says, sorry, but Pope Francis is no liberal. Trendy commentators have fallen in love with a pope of their own invention.
Yep.
I'm going to highlight this. I don't want to read too much of it because, you know, it will just sound self-congratulatory.
Right.
Does it name us by name?
Jeff D. Russell.
It doesn't.
Dennis.
Cool.
Dennis Loubet, who does amazing intros.
Can we send an angry letter to this guy for plagiarism?
What? Because we thought of it first.
That's right. We thought of not liking the Pope first.
Right.
Now it's a thing.
But anyway, you should check it out. It's worth a read. It begins on the last day of 2013. One of the weirdest religious stories for ages appeared on the news wires. The Vatican had officially denied that Pope Francis intended to abolish sin. It sounded like a spoof, but it wasn't. Who had goaded the Vatican into commenting on something so improbable? Turned out to be one of Italy's most distinguished journalists, Eugenio Scalfari, co-founder of the left-wing newspaper La Repubblica, who had just published an article titled Francis's Revolution, He Has Abolished Sin. Now, why would anyone, let alone a very highly regarded thinker and writer like Scalfari, believe the Pope had done away with such a basic tenet of Christian theology? Skipping down a little bit, that's how the Pope has come to be spun as a left liberal idol. Whenever he proves himself loyal to Catholic teaching, denouncing abortion, for instance, mm-hmm. or saying that same-sex marriage is an anthropological regression, his liberal fan base turns a deaf ear. Last month, America's oldest gay magazine, The Advocate, hailed Francis as its person of the year because of the compassion he expressed toward homosexuals. It was hardly a revolution. Article 2358 of the Catholic Church's Catechism calls for gay people to be treated with respect, compassion, and sensitivity. But by simply restating that established teaching, Francis was hailed as a hero. Then, when a Maltese bishop said the Pope had told him he was shocked by the idea of gay adoption, that just barely made a splash. Mm-hmm. His point being that people seem to have already established this narrative as the Pope is of some kind of revolutionary.
Right.
And so they cherry pick bits and pieces of the news stories that come out to construct this idea of a fantasy Francis that they really would like to hear news stories about and that sell papers.
Yeah. Now they're just operating on their own bias.
Yeah. Yeah, and to conclude, he says, don't be fooled. This is as much of a media-driven illusion as the idea that the Catholic Church is obsessed by sex and money. Hey, wait a minute.
Wait, it is.
Anyway. What matters is what the real Francis says and does, and that should be more interesting than even the most gripping invention.
No, less by what he says, more by what he does.
He touched a guy with boils, though.
That's true.
Got to give him that.
Yeah.
He did do that.
Not afraid to get his hands dirty.
He sat there while a little boy wandered around the stage. Did you see that video?
Did not scream, yeah, guard, seize him!
Yeah, or smack the kid or anything. He just sat there and ignored him. What else has he done? He's rumored to sneak out at night and tend to the poor.
Right.
Manually.
Well, that's just a rumor.
All right, so we've been all over that. Okay. What else we got? Got some more news? Do you have your segment? Or do you want to do that later?
Let's give it a few, another 10, 15 minutes.
I have sort of an intro to your segment.
Yeah, let's hold off on that a bit.
Okay.
So, lately I've been getting a lot of the news by tweeting the day of the show and saying, hey guys, got news for me, and that's working really well.
I gotta try that.
Yeah.
You know, we have an email address.
Yeah, but Twitter is people are just...
But dude, we get letter after letter after letter from listeners sending us in news items. There's that too.
Well, you it's read the email. There. How you come you're not bringing it?
Because I bring the listener commentary mail, not the news.
Oh,
generally.
Okay.
Just saying. You have another line of attack.
Got it. Well, the Twitter crowd actually seems to give me more than I need most weeks. This story was preceded by a wry comment, which was somebody tweeted at me, so are you feeling ashamed that Oklahoma might get gay marriage before Texas does? To which I said, not really. I do not have any high expectations of Texas at all. And it's not Oklahoma's fault that they are joining the 21st century, because it turns out that a federal judge is saying that the ban on same-sex marriage that they already instated a while ago is probably unconstitutional.
Yeah.
Have we got a ban on gay marriage here in Texas of that kind?
Well, Texas was the site of Lawrence versus Texas. I would think that if anybody has a ban on it, we do.
Okay.
I don't know.
So a federal judge could swoop in here and save us as well.
Sure.
Okay.
And boy, the talk of secession will blow up.
Yep. At which point, yeah, Austin will re-secede from Texas,
right,
back to the United, right, States. And then Texas will build a wall to keep us, mm-hmm, in.
And then we'll have to have an airlift of supplies to Austin. And
yep. Yeah. So a federal judge ruled Tuesday that an Oklahoma law limiting marriage to heterosexual couples violates the U.S. Constitution, giving yet another victory to same-sex marriage supporters. U.S. District Court Judge Terrence Kern said the court would not immediately enforce this ruling, therefore not opening the doors right away to marriages of gay and lesbian, right, couples in Oklahoma pending appeals. Still, he delivered a clear opinion on how the voter-approved Oklahoma state constitutional amendment relates to the U.S. Constitution. The court holds that Oklahoma's constitutional amendment limiting marriage to opposite-sex couples violates the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, mm-hmm, the judge wrote, saying that protection is at the very heart of our legal system.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Did we discuss the fact that the same thing was happening in Utah recently?
Yes. Already? There was a big brouhaha there.
I don't remember if we covered it on the last show.
Yeah, then, well, then that happened too.
That brouhaha is in for another ha.
Yes.
Now it's a brouhaha-ha.
A brouhaha-ha.
But, man, all the butthurt from Utah was amazing.
There was that dweeb who was gonna not eat until they took marriage, yeah, away from gay people again.
Was it butthurt by the opposition to gay marriage or the support? Oh, I'm sorry.
the opposite.
Oh, I stole your tasteless comment.
No, don't even go there.
I'm not making one now. So they're trying to roll that back.
Yeah, there. Yeah, of course they will.
Still, it seems pretty clear that the trend is toward this stupid obstacle finally going away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Looks that way.
About damn time.
All right.
Okay.
Should I do a little intro to your segment?
All right.
It's not actually my intro. We have the listeners love your new segment.
And at by least, listeners, we
I,
mean one
I mean
guy.
This one guy.
Read your intro. We're not afraid.
I had to write in to cast my vote in favor of the segment you tentatively called Random Bullshit We Found on the Internet 5 minutes before the show.
Oh, this is from 2 episodes ago.
Yes.
This letter actually came in like the day of last episode or the day after. So he's... It's all right. Your translation of The Mystery of Paradoxes was perfect. Please translate more of the crazy stuff religious people publicly say to one another. Thank you for your excellent program, James. Well, thank you for listening, James. Russell's going to do another segment right now.
Yeah. So,
it's time.
Also, I would like to give a shout out to our awesome engineer / producer, Sergio, who gave this cool echoey effect to this, so I'm going to keep announcing this in the same voice.
Okay.
Go for it.
Now it's time for Shit Internet Apologists Say.
Cool.
Let's just bask in that sound effect now.
Yeah,
okay.
That those of you listening live didn't hear. Post-production.
So I haven't really read this, but I'm familiar with the guy who posted it.
Okay.
Last year I had an online blog debate with a guy named Stephen Feinstein.
You mean a person named Stephen Feinstein?
What?
You mean a person named Stephen
Feinstein?
Yes. Doesn't matter, he's a guy.
Okay, but he is.
Okay, but it doesn't matter.
Okay, it doesn't matter. I had a...
Wow.
So this debate wound up being like 5 exchanges of posts, and it very quickly turned into presuppositional apologetics, which
sure,
of course.
I found out at the end of the debate, when I finally opened it up to comments, that every single one of the people reading, following the debate, hated every minute of that guy's argument. He was not only sort of long-winded, he was also incredibly self-congratulatory and smug at every step of the way.
That always helps.
Yeah, which I think actually is an integral part of the presuppositional apologetics tactics, because
I wouldn't be surprised.
None of presuppositional apologetics really makes any sense. So part of the way that you present it is to browbeat your opponent by constantly calling him an idiot for not accepting it.
So what is it exactly?
Oh, you want to go into that?
Oh, no, no. If it's obnoxious, no.
No, check it out, though. It's a discussion with Stephen Feinstein or something. It's on the Atheist Experience blog. You'll find it if you just search for that.
What's the name of Mr. Feinstein's opponent?
Me.
Oh. Okay, go ahead.
So Stephen has a blog called sovereignway.blogspot.com, which he created specifically for this debate. And then when he got flooded with comments after the debate, he quickly shut off the comments and then didn't really write another post for 6 months. But I have his blog on my roll, which is how I noticed that he recently started posting his own stuff again, which occasionally gets one comment instead of zero now, because I don't know, I'm sure he'll generate his own following, especially after this. But he's been doing a long series of posts about how important it is to make sure to focus on how depressed and empty people's lives are without God.
Wow.
And he's devoting his a different post to each segment of the population every few days. So this is about how super depressed philosophers are / should be.
Wow, he's holding imaginary conversations with them.
Yeah.
It's an awful lot of background.
This is a
and
lot of
context.
Yeah.
Can we get to the crazy words?
Okay. All right, Philosophers and the Line of Despair by Pastor Stephen Feinstein.
I'm not translating that. Go ahead.
We live in a postmodern world, and as I pointed out yesterday, we can pinpoint the shift from modernity to postmodernity with specific dates. Francis Schaeffer diagrammed this by drawing a line titled The Line of Despair. Everything before 1890 in Europe and 1935 in the United States was above the line of despair. And everything after was below the line of despair.
Okay, translation. There's one branch of philosophy, postmodernism.
Yes.
And all philosophy is that now because it fits his premise.
Sure, that's a fine translation. The line of despair simply refers to the fact that fallen man has rejected the existence of absolutes and has therefore given up his quest for a grand unifying theory. So his philosophies and theories continue to become more and more meaningless and absurd.
Translation. Postmodernism kind of says everything is bullshit. Which, by the way, a lot of postmodernist people who like that sort of way of looking at things are the most happy-go-lucky people you'd ever want to meet. They go happily through life not taking anything very seriously. It is, in my opinion, I'm not translating it now anymore. Now I've spun off into my own opinion. But in my opinion, it's very appealing. It's a very appealing way of looking at things.
Monty Python.
And it's odd.
Kind of, I mean, maybe not postmodernist, kind of existentialist in a way.
Hmm. It's kind of odd, though, that he mentions the grand unified theory. Scientists are in the process of looking for that.
Right.
Sure, yeah.
Right. But no. For purposes of this article, as we've already translated him to mean only postmodernism exists. Translation of his last bit. Postmodernism says everything is bullshit, Christianity is a thing, therefore we hate postmodernism.
Right, because really, there's no need to look for a grand unifying theory when you just assume that you know the answer already. The grand unifying theory is there's a God at the end.
Right, God did it.
Let's see, skipping a little bit. I told you this was going to be kind of rambly. Who caused the discipline of philosophy to go below the line of despair and introduce to the world the idea that there are no absolutes?
God did.
No, it was German philosopher Georg Hegel.
Damn.
Hegel, that bastard.
Who died in 1831, so that doesn't seem to support his point that that stuff in Europe was fine until 1890. I guess Hegel set this inexorable machine in motion.
Sequence of events has been set in motion.
Like a massive Rube Goldberg machine of meaninglessness.
Precisely.
Translation. This philosopher said a thing which I think is postmodernist, which means that Christianity is bullshit. Therefore, we don't like him, and we're going to say bad things about him.
And he started all the bad stuff.
Right. Prior to Hegel, philosophers generally held to absolutes and that truth was determined through antithesis. Things are objectively right and true or wrong and false. With antithesis, you have both cause and effect moving on a horizontal line. Well, Hegel overthrew this by insisting on synthesis.
I can't translate that because I don't know what the hell he's talking about.
It's rambly bullshit.
Okay.
The consequence of this understanding of truth is that truth is not objectively real. Instead, it is relative to society. It is relative to whatever ideas a society is willing to add to its total pot of truth.
Translation, again, postmodernism says everything's bullcrap. Christianity's a thing. Therefore, we hate postmodernism.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually a discussion that I've had a lot with Christians because, you know, there is a certain strain of Christian, I think Josh McDowell comes to mind, who love to go on and on about the, objective nature of capital T truth.
Right. Everything's got to be intrinsically good or bad.
Right. Yeah. But the interesting thing is that when they refer to truth, they mean putting absolute certainty into something that you want to believe.
Right.
Which ultimately is, I've argued, is the most stark example of subjectivity that you could come up with.
Mm-hmm.
Because it means that, you can't change your mind to match new information.
Right.
You can't gain more information about the world that you didn't have before. You have absolute unwavering confidence in the correctness of the stuff that was put in your head.
Right.
And since there are good different point. Things going on in everybody's heads, Muslims.
Yes.
I mean, faith seems to me incredibly subjective.
Yeah, it is, exactly.
Skip. That's not really why they hate postmodernism, though. Yeah. By the way, just insert another personal comment. Postmodernism is bullshit. Postmodernism is a pile of steaming bullshit, mostly. There are areas in which it's got a point. But when it goes after things like, the findings of science, then it's out of bounds.
You know, that artistically, things about postmodernism can be incredibly cool. There's a lot of postmodernist literature and movies. The Matrix comes to mind in that, in fact, to this guy's credit, he's got a cool picture of Neo stopping the bullets. I mean, The Matrix is a postmodernist movie in that it acknowledges the possibility that everything you see in the world could potentially be an illusion.
Everything we know is wrong.
Ripped away. And I think it's important to encourage people to realize that while there is probably objectively true things about the universe, the stuff that you think you know comes through a flawed mechanism of your senses, and you could be mistaken about a lot of stuff. That is part of postmodernism.
Okay. Well, That's a tame kind of postmodernism, because there's other postmodernists who literally said the findings of science are just social constructs.
Yes, and nothing, those people are full of
nothing
shit.
Nothing more. Right.
Right. Since this is long and rambly, and since I'm already looking at the part
can you find
of the
a
matrix.
Sentence, can you find a sentence in there which means something other than we hate postmodernism because it says Christianity is bullshit?
That's gonna be a challenge.
All right.
Moving on. I think you can see what all of these philosophies below the line of despair have in common. They all assume a meaningless atheistic reality, and thus they all separate reason and science from faith.
Did he
reason
mention?
Reason and science is separate from faith.
Did he mention? Yeah, good point. Did he mention any other philosophies besides postmodernism?
Because
he pretty much said all philosophy
line.
Is postmodernism.
He
right
mentions
there,
Hegel.
Sentence two.
He mentions existentialism, which I just brought up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. R.E. Monty Python.
Yeah. That's it?
Existentialism, and then Jean-Paul Sartre and Albert Camus, who both had some interesting fiction also. They saw the universe as an absurdity of randomness. And then he brings up The Matrix, saying it captured this philosophy well.
The Matrix is nothing like an absurdity of randomness. A virtual reality setting is very carefully engineered.
Yeah.
He didn't understand The Matrix.
Nope.
Well, no one can be told what The Matrix is.
Right.
You have to see it for
yourself.
Somebody
really, really tried with this guy, and he's having none of it.
Right.
Didn't take the proper pill.
The average person on the street obviously does not think so sophisticatedly about these matters. By the way, sophisticatedly.
Translation.
Sophisticatedly, I believe, is not a word.
Translation. I'm sophisticated,
and you're
and not.
You're not, yes.
Wow.
The man on the street.
That was nice.
Shit, I apologize. Sophisticatedly.
I'm checking
come
if it's
on,
a word.
I don't mind. Dictionary.com.
You're objecting to his use of sophisticatedly?
I'm objecting to his grammar by haphazardly tacking on suffixes to things. That's the kind of stuff you pull in Scrabble if you are trying to fake a really long, cool word. And I do not think that sophisticatedly...
I think it has a a use.
All right. I'm going to back off on that one.
Grammar is, of course, nothing but a social construct.
That's
that
true.
Is absolutely true.
Very postmodernist of you to say.
Yes.
Like I said, there's areas
therefore
where postmodernism does have a point.
Where language is bullshit. Right.
They have been taught by the general culture that truth is up to each individual and we are not to judge. It is important for Christians, however, to know that this foolish idea originated in the hopeless reasonings of philosophers that refused to see God as the ground and center of all reality.
Translation? Political correctness is also postmodernism, and therefore we hate that too.
Yeah.
Sure. Wow.
You know, when religion comes in conflict with science, when, you know, careful, methodical investigation of the world conflicts with the preconceived ideas that people like Stephen already have in their heads, the solution by Stephen is to throw out the observations and doggedly stick to the stuff that they want to believe.
Right,
again, the ultimate in subjectivity.
Yeah. Yeah, having faith means you don't care if it's true or false.
Yeah, and yet at the same time, they claim credit for science.
Faith and science can coexist, just science always loses.
Right.
Then they can coexist just fine.
Yeah. By the way, Feinstein, I gathered from tangential remarks made in our debate, is a young Earth creationist.
Wow.
All right. Last paragraph, and I've skipped quite a bit.
Thank you.
This is why the average person these days thinks the way they do. It started with the philosophers. Eventually, it made its way to the masses. I'm surprised he didn't say sheeple.
The masses are all familiar with Hegel.
Right. Though it lost its sophisticated form.
I don't think that's a word.
All right, that one was me.
Yeah, okay.
So anyway, this is one of many posts that Stephen has gotten the bug up his ass to write recently. So if you want to check those out, those are at sovereignway.blogspot.com.
So translation.
Unutterably dreary.
Translation of the last sentence. For centuries, people had to listen to what we told them, or we'd burn them at the stake. They won't listen anymore. Boo hoo.
In a nutshell. And there that's it for this week.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Russell. Do you have any idea what sort of thing you'll be turning to for the next random shit you found before the show? Did you in fact find this before the day before the show, or 5 minutes before the show?
No, I had noticed it in my feed for a couple of weeks and lacked the fortitude to sit there and read it by myself. So I thought, good thing for a segment.
All right. So another thing we've been talking about a lot on this show is misogyny.
That's a word. Congratulations, Jeff.
And I'll just say, now that our earlier shows are up on the intertubes and people can go listen to them anytime they want, there's people who didn't have a chance to yell at us before now yelling at us over old shows that they've listened to and not understood our point.
Okay. And you're really going to keep this going, huh?
No. I'm just going to make just a quick comment for the sake of those people who don't understand what we're talking about.
Okay.
You folks are complaining that that what we're saying is that an individual who is suffering from prejudice is not allowed to try to do anything about it if they are part of a larger group that is in the advantageous position, and that is not what we're saying.
Not at all.
We're saying that if your group is enjoying the advantageous position and you form a movement or organization that is about improving the position of your group as a whole, then you are an ass. That is what we're saying.
Well said.
We have not.
I
have no problem with if there were smaller organizations focusing on individual issues for the benefit of people who happen to be in the advantaged group,
sure,
but who are suffering from problems on specific things, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. Though the underlying math that we were talking about does remain the same, but it is probably unreasonable to expect those people to refrain from defending themselves, much as you might wish that they would. And I want to bring up a analogy from a different area, something else we've talked about in the past, which is homeschooling.
Yes.
Right? You can get in, you can get into very heated discussions.
Oh, yeah.
With parents of children who have crappy school districts, right,
mm-hmm,
who wish to avail themselves of the bounties of homeschooling because they are concerned that little Bobby get the best possible education.
Right.
And they make that decision for themselves because of their individual circumstances, without concerning themselves with the wider implications for our nation of the undermining of public education in general. And I can understand them, and I'm sympathetic to them, and that doesn't stop me wishing that they would,
Right.
Why don't you do some supplemental education with your kid when they come back from your crappy mm-hmm. public school, right? I mean, you don't necessarily have to abandon the system. But I don't want to get off on that tangent. I'm just saying, mm-hmm. I can understand individuals in bad situations wanting to do that. But
right.
when you make you have a movement for the group, and the group is already in the better position, and you're wanting to make that even better still, you're a dick. I'm sorry. We'll make you an asshole, because that's everybody's everybody's got those. So anyway, that was for those people who insist on continuing to write in and tell us how we're wrong. Mm-hmm. We got this letter. I came up with a potential name for the scenario Jeff describes concerning the disparity between the sum total of actionable rights enjoyed by different groups. And we did talk about that when I came up with the, say men have this number representing their amount of rights, and women have that number representing their amount of rights.
Sure.
And men improve their number without hurting the other groups, without hurting the number that women have, and thinking that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That was the mathematical analogy. He's talking about that. I think the dodgy reasoning advanced by men's rights advocates should be called the Pareto improvement fallacy.
Pareto?
I
need some help with that.
Our listener uses a word with which we are not familiar.
That's right.
It's the name of a guy. He was an Italian, Italian economist or mm-hmm. something, I believe, in the early 1900s. What he's referencing here is this concept where, say, you have a box with 100 toy blocks in it,
okay.
and there's two children, and Jimmy takes for himself 51 toy blocks. There are only 49 left for Billy, and if Jimmy takes another one, then I've lost track of their names now. That the kid who has more takes another one. The kid who doesn't have it now has less. That's what he's referencing, that concept. And he's saying there is a fallacy that men's rights advocates are bringing to bear when they argue against the model that I was proposing. Says there's a strong parallel to be drawn between the scenario Jeff outlined and the problem of economic inequality, which some fiscal conservatives try and argue against by invoking the idea of Pareto efficiency. The argument offered by both MRAs and some fiscal conservatives is that an increase in the aggregate total of X has occurred, but no individual or group has been absolutely disadvantaged by that increase. According to this logic, it's fine for men's rights to increase from 2.0 to 2.1 as long as women's rights stay at 1.8 and don't decrease. Had women's rights dropped to 1.7, they would have been absolutely disadvantaged because the men's gain would have come at a result of the women's loss, and the change would not qualify as a Pareto improvement.
Okay.
The problem, of course, is that even if women's rights stay at 1.8, the gap between the two genders has increased.
Increased
by men gaining 0.1, meaning that women are now at a greater relative disadvantage to men than they were before. The argument invoked by MRAs only holds true if you begin with the premise that only the total quantity of rights in existence matters, and the question of who actually exercises them is irrelevant.
Right.
Accepting such a premise can lead to absurd situations where, for example, titled landowners or any other privileged group could enjoy an extraordinary quantity of rights while everyone else enjoys virtually none. We disagree with the MRAs because we instinctively recognize that there's a problem to be addressed if men have 2.0 rights and women have 1.8, just like we would if tyrannical monarchs had 12.4 rights and feudal serfs had 0.6.
Right.
The premise at the core of our counter-argument is that equality is the primary goal, and also that raising the quantity of rights enjoyed by the disadvantaged is the preferred method of achieving it. Mm-hmm. We'd ideally like to see both men and women enjoy 2.0 rights, rather than crudely averaging them out to 1.9. And then work together to move in tandem toward 2.1, 2.2, yeah. etc. Raising the quantity of rights enjoyed by the disadvantaged group to bring it closer to the advantaged group qualifies as a Pareto improvement for both from both an absolute and relative perspective, as the sum total of rights across the board has increased, but the disparity of the distribution of those rights has also decreased at the same time.
Nice.
It's Aaron from England in the UK. Thank you very much for that, Aaron.
Very clear.
That's the best formulation of that I've heard. So thanks. Is there comments on that, guys?
He's right.
Is this then a whole episode about we were right all along? Here's other people saying how right we were. Because there's a potential trap there. Let's not blind ourselves to this fact.
Steven Feinstein doesn't think so.
That's true.
You see, you successfully reduced people to mere numbers.
Oh, is that where I went wrong?
Whole categories of people reduced to numbers on your calculator.
Okay.
Scientist.
We got some more show left.
Here's some things about disagreement. There's a study out by Pew Research Center saying that the share of countries with a high or very high level of social hostilities involving religion reached a 6-year peak in 2012.
Hmm? What is?
A third of the 198 countries and territories included in the study had high religious hostilities in 2012, up from 29% in 2011 and 20% in mid-2007.
Now, when they say religious hostilities, what do they mean?
Yeah. Is this
violence perpetrated by religious people?
Against religious people?
Or between religious people?
How do they define this? The Social Hostilities Index measures acts of religious hostility by private individuals, organizations, or groups in society. This includes religion-related armed conflict or terrorism, mob or sectarian violence, harassment over attire for religious reasons, or other religion-related intimidation or abuse. Huh. The SHI includes 13 measures of social hostilities. As noted above, there has been a sizable increase in the share of countries with high or very high levels of social hostilities involving religion. In Libya, for instance, two worshippers were killed in an attack on a Coptic Orthodox church in the city of Misrata in December 2012. This was the first attack in Libya specifically targeting a church since the 2011 revolution, according to the U.S. Department of State.
Wow.
I'm going to say we're against that.
Yes, we are.
Wonder what could be the cause. Could it be the increasing secularism? And these are the failing religions?
Yeah, it could be.
What?
The ones that they specify, like in several cases, seem to be some Muslim-on-Christian violence.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see what else they talk about. Well, monks attacked Muslim Buddhist majority Sri Lanka. Monks attacked Muslim and Christian places of worship.
Dennis could still be right, of course, because in a world with dwindling numbers of people willing to be religious, right? It's shrinking resources, and fights could erupt between the different sects. Right. Over dwindling resources.
Right.
The problem is that there are religious people in charge of these countries, and these countries have weapons.
Yeah.
It could be bad.
Yeah, that's bad. We're against that.
Right. We're against violence in general and, religious inspired violence as much as anything else.
Yeah. Hmm.
But surely some of that violence could have been, you know, self-defense, freedom,
sure.
Actual freedom fighting, which happens.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly, but I mean, the absolute number has gone up by a lot.
Yeah.
What if I'm always curious when we hear about studies like this. You know, what if what is the least violent thing that counts as a violent act?
Right.
Does the squirting of squirt guns count? And what if there was a giant wave of Muslim on Christian squirt gun attacks?
Right.
Would that cause a spike?
There's also the possibility that there's an increase in the reporting of such things.
Right.
Right.
I don't know.
But still, that's a disturbing trend.
Yep.
In case we have any religious listeners at all, and I guess it might happen, right? Cut that shit out.
I think the religious listeners we have are probably not the ones doing the violence. But if you are, for shame.
Especially don't do it to us, okay?
Yeah.
No matter how mad we make you.
Let's see. The UK seems to have done something historically novel, which is that they've granted somebody asylum based on his being an atheist.
Ooh.
This is an Afghan man who, he's a 23-year-old, fearing that if forcibly returned to his homeland, he would face persecution for having renounced his faith. The Home Office's decision to accept denial of the existence of God as grounds for protection could set a significant precedent in asylum and immigration cases. The application was granted before the hearing stage at an immigration tribunal.
Yeah, I mean, the religion of peace, you know, its response to apostatism is, you know,
and right there you have a potential for more religious violence in reaction to an entire nation agreeing to respect that.
Very true.
Well, I'm very happy for that guy.
Yeah.
There needs to be a lot more of that going on.
Yes, me too. Wow, 9 more minutes. Relativity.
Well, let's take a break and talk about what's going on with us. I mean, you mentioned
we did that already.
yes, we kind of did that.
Dennis,
I'm doing artwork for Portalarium right now.
And what's
for
Portalarium?
Shroud of the Avatar.
And what's Shroud of the Avatar?
That's Lord British's new game.
Lord
and
British,
who is Lord British?
Lord British was the Ultima guy.
Yes.
The Ultima.
Who is John Galt?
The game Ultima.
Ultima was a well-known series of old-timey
RPGs.
Single-player RPGs, computer RPGs.
Mm-hmm.
And he's back.
He's back.
And he's making an MMO.
Yes, he's making an MMO called Shroud of the Avatar.
And you're doing art for that?
I'm doing art for Blade of the Avatar, which is the fiction written by Tracy Hickman for...
Cool. Ooh, I like Tracy Hickman.
Yes.
I'm actually...
For Shroud of the Avatar.
I am reading the Rose of the Prophet series to my son Ben right now.
Ah.
Have you read it?
No, I am not.
Oh, man, I am... This is like my third or fourth time reading through the series.
Yeah.
I am a big fan. Basically, Hickman being both a big role-playing guy and a big fantasy novelist, together with his co-author Margaret Weiss, have the perfect blend of these because he has invented a world where the world is shaped like a 20-sided die.
Oh, cool. All right.
Each point on the die represents a particular personality trait, like good or evil or greed or faith or something like that. And each plane of the die touches on 3 points, and the god has those 3 properties. And so there are 20 gods who definitely exist and interact with each other and go to holy war with each other. And all these people, like, have this very localized view of, like, you know, well, Ahron is the one true god. And,
it was a brilliant conceit.
Super
like
entertaining. And,
that's great.
Cool.
Rose of the Prophet.
So how long will you be, are they asking for a lot of illustrations?
Well, it's one a chapter.
I see. Do you know how many?
I don't know how many chapters there will be. They're releasing them, you know, as the chapters are finished.
There must be some plan. You could ask them what the plan is.
I might do that. I'll be seeing them tomorrow. We can see.
Cool. Russell, anything else you want to report from life?
That our
listeners might care about.
No,
I know it's all tougher for you because you're not Dennis. We're these tiny little celebrities with some fans in a particular hobby. Couple of hobbies.
I'm only a tiny little celebrity in that people recognize me for stuff like this a little bit,
which is and that's why people care. So you should.
Yep.
You should
fans.
Seize that. I'm working on the very last illustration from my last Kickstarter project, Takamal Skies, which is the flying creatures from the world of Takamal. I'm doing an RPG. Takamal is the fantasy world from Empire of the Petal Throne, which was the second RPG ever published by TSR, the Dungeons & Dragons guys, back in like 76 or 77, something like that. And then I'm gonna launch a new Kickstarter, which is going to be recreating illustrations from a book called Fiend Folio, which was an advanced Dungeons and Dragons book that has all kinds of crazy weird monsters in it.
Speaking of fantasy.
Weird crazy monsters?
Yeah, actually that too.
Okay.
It turns out there's a very weird protest going on in Iceland where some people are trying to build a road and some other people are protesting this the building of this road on the grounds that the proposed road would disturb the habitat of elves who live among the rocks. I am not making this up. This is taking place in Iceland. Elves and fairies are closely related in folklore, and though elves specifically seem to have sprung from early Norse mythology, by the 1800s, fairies and elves were widely considered to be simply different names for the same magical creatures. Polls find that over half of Iceland's population believes in elves, or at least doesn't rule out the possibility of their existence.
I think 100% of them believe in roads.
I would think so, but, you know, they don't all believe they're good.
Are they going to be, is there going to be a toll paid by those elves? That's what I want to know.
No, it's trolls that take tolls to cross places. Right. And,
so they can't make it okay with the elves by giving them little bridges where they can operate their tolling
give
business.
Give them $24 worth of beads.
This is Iceland. There's a limited amount of space to put in roads.
I suppose.
So we're, for those of you, watching the clock, while listening to our show, we are gonna end, I think it's about 5 minutes early this time because we started a little late, but somebody has to leave at a certain time. So we're gonna short you 5 minutes a show today. Sorry about that. But since we have pretty much run out of things to talk about anyway, it's not that big of a deal. We will be back. Our next episode will be the first Wednesday in February, which is the what? Do we know?
The
5th. The 5th, February 5. Mm-hmm. Right here from from our secret location.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Well,
I'm done.
Okay.
And you're done.
Well, we're just gonna go ahead and end the show now.
Oh, well,
wow. We're gonna short them an extra 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Bye, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, that was our show, and there's nothing you can do about it. If we feel like it, we'll be back in another episode in 3 weeks on February the 5th. Until then, you can't stop us from playing Satellite by Brian Stieksma. So there.
Upstairs. ago.